Welcome to Coaching Uncaged, brought to you by Animas. This is a special edition featuring a keynote presentation by Animas founder Nick Bolton. You can also watch this talk on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/Animas Coaching.
Thank you so much for being here. This is the third in the lecture series of six lectures looking at the transformative coaching and the five principles of transformative coaching. And today we're going to be talking about holistic and systemic principle. So I'm just going to quickly switch over to my slides. Let me do a screen share and we'll dive in, because I noticed that the hour goes very, very quickly. So I'll try not to waste too much time. We have an hour together, so we'll finish by 7:30. I will try to build some time in for Q&A, but I must say the hour does fly by. So let's just see. And we do have a lot to cover. So let's see how we get on. Let me quickly share this slide. Can I give you a little thumbs up, please? We can just see that. Excellent. Thank you so much, Ali. Thank you so much. Great. Perfect. Okay, so here we go, towards the whole person. I'm just going to move these photos somewhere. There we go, down the bottom. Towards the whole person, the holistic and systemic principle in transformative coaching. So let's first of all think about what we're going to cover tonight. First thing we're going to look at is, what do we mean by holistic and systemic? What do I mean by them? And I say that with a great emphasis, because of course there are many different ways of thinking about holistic and systemic. And what I'm not presenting you with is some de facto truth here. This is just my perspective on it, how I see these two fitting into the transformative coaching process. Then we're going to take a look at why this principle has become a key part of the Animas five principles of transformative coaching. We'll look at nested systems and multiple systems and how they interact within coaching. And then we'll take a look specifically at the systemic stance within transformative coaching and how those two go hand in hand in many ways. I want to take a look at the coach as part of the system and how you become aware of yourself as a part of a system. And then I'm going to throw in some practical approaches to systemic coaching. I do want to kind of stress that this is primarily a stance, and particularly tonight, we're going to be looking at this from a perspective of the philosophy of systemic coaching rather than being a very practical session. But nonetheless, I want to kind of at least show you how you begin to do some systemic approaches to coaching at a very simple level in some ways. It's not that difficult to start to find your way into systemic ways of thinking. And then finally, I'm going to offer you a cheese board dessert with different cheeses you can choose from and different ideas that we can start to play with. And I'm just going to close off with a bit of a mixed bag of cheeses, just the ideas that came to me. I don't want to go in too much depth with them, but they came to me and they felt quite important to at least surface as ideas. Now, before I go into the next part, let me just introduce myself. Now we've got plenty of people here. I'm Nick Bolton. I'm the founder of Animas Center for Coaching and the International Center for Coaching Supervision. And part of the reason why I'm doing this lecture series, and I'll keep saying this while I do them, because different people will join and miss the previous one, et cetera, is that over the years, we've talked about transformational coaching and now transformative coaching, because it has a more theoretical stance. But we've never really taken the time to dive deep into what makes transformative coaching transformative as opposed to developmental or something else. Never really taken a look at the deeper theory behind it. And so this whole lecture series is my attempt to uncover the very work that I've been involved in for years at a pragmatic level. And now it's like, well, let's take a look at really what's sitting behind that theoretically. So let's go to where, let's situate ourselves first. This is the five Animas principles of transformative coaching. And at the center, you have the phenomenological heart of the coaching approach. We're going to come to that at the end of the whole series. And then we have the humanistic lens, or the principle, the psychological principle, holistic and systemic and integrative. And of course, in the last lecture, if you were here, we covered the humanistic approach to transformative coaching and some of the limitations and challenges of the humanistic psychology that sits behind coaching. And today we're going to be investigating holistic and systemic. So that gives you a bit of a steer as to where we are. And we've still got plenty to dive into over the course of the next, what, three lectures or so. So first of all, let's talk about what we mean by holistic and systemic. And as I said at the very start, I see this as being my definition. These are not things that you necessarily have to agree with. Many of you might have different approaches to both of these words and say, well, that doesn't make sense to me. That's not how I see it. And that's okay. I'm presenting you with my sense making around this. And by the way, that itself is very fluid and can change over time. But I think it's important to say, let me kind of express where I'm coming from at this point. And the way I see it, and this might challenge some of you, but the way I see it is that holistic is the what you might call the internal subjective system. It's the client's phenomenological experience that encapsulates all aspects of that experience. And I'll come to that a little bit later on. But fundamentally, when I talk about holistic, I'm talking about the individual subjective system. And if you think about yourself as a system, you're a number of different facets or parts that come together to make the whole that you might call the self. And so I'm calling that the holistic lens. You might think of holistic being something else. So I just wanted to, I want you to hold those things very loosely and not get too attached to what I think or what you think. And then secondly, the systemic principle is really the external system. It's the systems we inhabit. And at the same time, the holistic system is part of that wider system. So in other words, there's a human being that exists in the world and they have a holistic makeup. And at the same time, that human being exists within much wider systems of influence that shape them, that constrain them. And so when I'm talking about holistic and systemic, these are not really two separate things. It's more about internal and external, or intrapersonal and interpersonal. And I think that's really important to recognize that when we talk about transformative coaching, we're really talking about one whole systemic approach that just happens to identify the individual and the wider system. So I'm going to talk about the holistic stance and the systemic stance at a sort of a principle level first, and then we'll dive into what they mean in practice. So here is my definition of the holistic stance, and it's the holistic stance in coaching recognizes and values two different things, recognizes and values all aspects of the individual's phenomenological experience with an underlying assumption of the wholeness and interconnectedness of the parts, the logical and creative minds, somatic responses, intuition, personality, intrapsychic parts, relationality, and spiritual dimensions. In other words, a whole person approach. And I think when I talk about holistic stance, it's recognizing that we are dealing with all those aspects of the human being that shows up. And I would say that in many ways, I can be quite guilty of being a very cognitive coach and a cognitive supervisor. That's my default stance, but it doesn't mean I don't value those other parts. But I think I could definitely grow in terms of how I value other aspects of that holistic stance. And certainly other people within this talk tonight who are watching this no doubt can relate to this in different areas and say, well, I spend a lot of time focusing here. But I think the important thing is to say, let's accept and recognize and value the holistic nature of the person rather than only thinking about them as a brain on a stick. And we can think of this as almost like a flower unfolding. You have the client, which is a unified sense of self. And we can get into what a self is in another talk, perhaps some way down the line. I have my own notions of what a self is, but there are multiple concepts of self. But let's say there's some phenomenological perspective on the self, i.e. I experience myself as a self. How you define that almost doesn't matter. I experience, each of you does. Each of you has made a choice to be here. There's some kind of version of a self that's here tonight, and that's fine. So at the center is this kind of the center of the flower. And then the petals are the logical mind, the thinking, the figuring out, the sense making, the questioning, the challenging. And I think coaches are very good at that. We're very good at the thinking part. And in recent years, I've noticed there's been a shift away from the logical mind towards some other aspects. You've seen the growth of somatic coaching. And so down in the bottom right there, you have embodied practices, somatic responses, and so on. And then we have the creative approaches. And there's many more creative dimensions to coaching that have really sprung up in the last few years, which have taken a much more playful, spontaneous approach to using things like walking outdoors, or using objects and painting and art and writing and journaling and all sorts of things that create a greater access to the creative mind. And then finally, bottom left there, tapping into the intuition and the unconscious and really thinking about what's unknowable about us, but that we can start to tap into through intuition, through bringing the unconscious to conscious, through whether it's things like traits and personality measures, all sorts of stuff. Who are we at the unconscious level that we can start to bring out? And that would be, for me, the holistic view. So then let's talk about, what do we mean by system? And we'll start to bring this together as a way of thinking about transformative coaching. What do we mean by system? Well, Fritjof Capra says systems are integrated wholes whose essential properties arise from the relationship between its parts. Peter Senge says a system is a perceived whole whose elements hang together because they continually affect each other over time and operate towards a common purpose. I have to say I would question that latter bit, operate towards a common purpose, but I guess you could say that it operates towards a common purpose of the system, but not necessarily consciously. And then finally, Peter Hawkins, one of the key figures in systemic coaching at the moment, says that a system is an integrated whole whose essential properties arise from the relationships between its parts. So that's what a system is. Let's think about systemic. Before we do that, let me just try to make that really clear in terms of the system. And I think the best way is to think of this little thing here. And so the thing in the middle is a system. It's a bike. The thing around the edges are parts. They don't really serve a great deal of function alone, but put them together and they serve a function. And so the parts serve the function of the system. And the old classic saying is the sum of the is the whole is the greater than the sum of the parts. And you can make sense, doesn't it? If you take all those little bits around that bike and put them together, that's the sum of the parts, but the whole is the system that's working. So hopefully that kind of gives you a better idea of the very notion of a system, that it's relational parts working together. But let's now take a look at the sixth systemic stance. And this is my definition, and apologies, it's quite long. But for me, the systemic stance recognizes that a person is part of multiple systems that shape and impact their beliefs, expectations, aspirations, values, relationships, assumptions, purpose, meaning, and more. That the coach is also part of such systems, and that these systems inevitably collide, collude, and coalesce in ways that shape the coaching. Let me read that one more time because there's a lot there. The systemic stance recognizes that a person is a part of multiple systems that shape and impact their beliefs, expectations, aspirations, values, relationships, assumptions, purpose, meaning, and more. That the coach is also part of such systems, and that these systems inevitably collide, collude, and coalesce in ways that shape the coaching. And we'll really take a look at that in a bit more detail as we go through this talk. But I want to kind of lay out the foundational definitions as I see it. So let's talk about why this principle has made its way into the Animas 5 principles of transformative coaching. The first thing to say is that it counterbalances the humanistic emphasis on the individual as self-actualizing, self-directed, a wholly self-responsible being. In other words, if you think about Jean-Paul Sartre's oft-quoted idea of we are condemned to be free, a systemic approach will say, well, we're not really as free as you think we are. Yeah, we are condemned to be free, or we're condemned to experience being free, but how free we really are is another question. And so the systemic stance feels to me very important to counterbalance this overemphasis on the individual as being both sacrosanct and, in a sense, omniscient in their own development. The second thing is it recognizes the impact and the value of the external and internal systemic forces that shape, support, and constrain us. In other words, it starts to recognize that the context in which we belong is both going to have an impact on us and yet has also value. I think that the risk is we sometimes think of systemic forces being inherently negative. There's no reason for thinking that, but I've noticed it. I noticed there's a sort of a response to systems as being somehow negative and something we have to battle against. But in truth, the system is just what it is. It's neither good nor bad. The question is, how do we notice the impact it's having on us, and how do we value what it enables us to accomplish and what it constrains us from achieving for ourselves? And it also brings balance to the reductionist linear assumptions of change by acknowledging our part in a system of limitless complexity and moving parts. In other words, what's called the butterfly effect. The risk is in coaching that sometimes we can take an extremely first order view of change, which says if I do this, then this will happen. A plus B equals C. But the truth is that we don't know what C is going to look like until C shows up in the world, nor do we know how C is going to feel, how it's going to experience it, how it's going to affect other people, whether C will even happen in the first place. And if any of you have watched the film The Butterfly Effect, you'll know that every time every time the main protagonist goes back in time to change something about his past, it has knock-on effects that he simply cannot predict. And I think recognizing that we're part of systems enables us to recognize the complexity we're part of, the vast complexity of unknown consequences that happen when we start to create change. And that shouldn't paralyze us from creating change, but it should at least help us recognize that the change isn't guaranteed to give us what we think. So why does that matter to recognize those three? Well, I think the first thing is it's reality. I don't think coaching was ever meant to be something that denied our existential reality of being situated socially, historically, and temporally. And yet sometimes coaching can feel like that. It can feel like a simplified logical step towards change. But the reality is we are situated in all sorts of ways that constrain that power to make change that we want. So Walt Disney's concept that if you can dream it, you can do it, is clearly just not true. If you can dream it, you might be able to do it. It's probably a much more nuanced version of it. The fact is, it's just we have to face reality. And as you know, some of you might know that one of my favorite sayings I heard recently was, "The truth shall set you free, but first it will punch you in the face." And I think there's something really important about recognizing the power of facing the truth, but also the unpleasantness sometimes of facing that truth. Secondly, it contextualizes a client's challenge or challenges, and that allows for normalizing and de-shaming. There can be a lot of time in coaching where the client feels either unconsciously or consciously ashamed that they haven't moved forward as fast or as meaningfully as they think they should have done, because they're not recognizing the systemic forces that are in some way holding them back. And by the way, when I say it's holding them back, it doesn't mean they can't overcome them. But if we don't recognize what those forces are, we don't know what we need to overcome. And then finally, it enables the client to face that system with personal agency, yet recognizing the limitations within it. In other words, the system is the system. That doesn't stop us having a response that's uniquely ours to that system. But equally, that doesn't negate the system. The two are in some level of tension. My ability to have personal agency within the system and the system's existence regardless of my personal agency. And those two are at some level holding some kind of tension. And I think as coaches, we need to help the client face that tension of agency versus systemic forces that both enable and constrain us. And finally, it draws out possibilities for coaching that are otherwise missed in the focus on the person as a wholly autonomous being. And I'll come to that later when I talk about the practicalities of systemic coaching. But what I mean by that in simple terms is that we can be so focused on the individual's stated goal or their stated change process that we miss what are the systemic forces that could be talked about, brought in, changed, that need to be made aware of. So for instance, if you're trying to change something in your life, but you have a partner that has a role in that, if we don't acknowledge that partner's role in the change, we're ignoring a key part of your personal system that is not going to support the change unless it's talked about. So in other words, it allows us to bring up new possibilities within the coaching that deals with the system that exists. I'm always conscious of time. I would love to take questions as we go, but I think I need to just battle on and then we'll do some Q&A at the end. So let's talk about systemic stance and transformative coaching, which is in a sense why we're here. How do these two relate? And I want to start off with this very, very classic little mini story from David Foster Wallace, who says, there are two young fish swimming along and they happen to meet an older fish swimming the other way, who nods at them and says, "Morning, boys, how's the water?" And the two young fish swim on for a bit. And then eventually one of them looks at the other and goes, "What the hell is water?" And I think when we talk about transformative coaching and systemic coaching, what we're really looking at is how do you help somebody see the water? How do you help a client see that they are swimming in water? And in order for them to change their life, they have to figure out how that water is impacting them. So when we think about the systemic stance and transformative coaching, a classic writer from transformative learning, Robert Keegan, asks, what is the form that transforms? what is the form that transforms when we talk about transformative learning or transformative coaching? And of course, the form is the mental paradigm or the perspective or the worldview. Transformative coaching is fundamentally about transforming mental paradigms or perspectives. But mental paradigms are not the system. Mental paradigms is the, if you like, the consequence or the symptom of somebody's exposure to a system. And so the paradigm is intrinsically shaped by and responsive to the systemic context they're in. You wouldn't have the paradigm you have if you weren't in the system you're in. And so in order for us to begin to evoke paradigmatic change at a mental level, we have to start to take into account the system that's produced that paradigm. And so understanding and exploring the system becomes a vital part of the transformative endeavor. And that's really, in a sense, my starting point for why this really, really matters for us. If we don't start to take into account the systemic forces, any transformative coaching is operating at a very superficial level that won't stand up to the forces that still exist if they're not explored. In my opinion, I'll say that like it's a fact, it might not be a fact, but that's how I tend to make sense of it. So let's talk about then, what do we mean by systems when it comes to somebody's experience of life? It's one thing to talk about a system, but is that some vast global thing? No, not necessarily. A system can be very simple. And we can talk about nested systems being different levels of scope within a system. So if I take, for instance, a classic client who's a manager within an organization, that manager is part of a team. The team is a system. It's a system that manager is a part of, but that team itself is then nested within, let's say, for argument's sake, a division. But that division is nested within a company, and that company is nested within an industry, and the industry within an economy, and that economy within society, and society within civilization. And at different levels, the systemic forces are going to be feeding their way through those nested systems, and also from the manager feeding their way back up. At an increasingly diluted state, of course. The manager has a great ability to change a team, very, very little ability to change the civilization. But nonetheless, every little bit is beginning to ripple through the system. If enough managers and enough teams and enough divisions and enough companies and enough industries and enough economies, et cetera, that's when the ripples become bigger and bigger and bigger. So a nested system is simply the recognition that there are different scales of system and that we have different scope to influence and be influenced by systems. So you might say that the team is influencing the manager in a very, very direct fashion that they can probably become conscious of quite easily. What they're less conscious of is the overwhelming impact that the civilization's had on them as a system. The civilization's impact is much greater than the team, but it's less direct. It's less tangible as an experience. It's less phenomenological, let's say, for the manager, and yet it's there. So if we take, let's throw in humanity and life. let's take another one. Let's take a coach. I don't know how many of you have trained with Animas, but let's say you've trained with Animas and you're a coach. You're part of the Animas system. Doesn't mean you have to be, but at some level, you're going to be soaking up certain assumptions, values, perspectives that Animas represents within the coaching world. Indeed, the very fact you're here at this talk is a part of the Animas system that's having an impact on you and that you will have an impact on in turn. The Animas is part of ICF UK, which is part of ICF Global, which is part of the coaching profession as a whole, which is part of the people helping professions, which is part of the service sector, which is part of the economy, and so on. And again, at different levels, you can see how these systems interact. So if I, for instance, I started my supervision school a couple of years ago, well, supervision primarily started within the people helping professions. It didn't start in coaching. It started in social work and psychotherapy. It started in those areas, but because it's part of the same broad family of systems, it's worked its way through down to coaching. And then finally, if we take a look at a human being, let's say me, I got married back in 2018, so I'm now part of a married system. My wife and I have families and friends, and we're part of a family and friends system. And in turn, all of those people are part of wider communities. My wife is Chinese, so her family and friends tend to be from a Chinese community in north of China. I'm from Cornwall and I'm from the UK, so my communities tend to be more in that way. And the two have some interesting intersections when the Chinese way of thinking and the English way of thinking come together. We are both part of nations and different nations' ethoses. Ethi? What's the plural of ethos? Ethi? I don't know, whatever. So we have different ways of thinking about the world based on the nations we're part of. And of course, nations are part of civilizations, species, life, and so on. And so if you ever learned chunking, NLP chunking, it's a very similar concept for chunking. Ever greater levels of generalization or ever greater levels of specificity as you go down into the system. So those are nested systems. And what we can start to do in coaching is to recognize what is the level of the system where change needs to happen most effectively for that person? What can they influence or what's influencing them? And what do we need to be aware of? If I want to evoke change in my life and I don't take into account my wife's needs, it's going to end badly at some point if my needs are completely unaligned from hers. And so a coach would need to be asking me about my system. And so at some level, we need to be bringing up awareness of the different systems and also where's the change needing to happen. So once we've got these nested systems in mind, we can then talk about multiple systems and we can say, well, my goodness me, there are work systems, family systems, personal systems, socioeconomic systems, and many more. And so as a coach, we can start to help the client become aware of what is the system that's most at play here. If it's an organizational coaching contract, potentially it's a work system, but maybe not. Maybe the family system is really at play here. Maybe there's something around what's happening in the family that's impacting the work. Maybe it's personal systems. In other words, the holistic, the somatic, the spiritual, the cognitive, the intuitive. Maybe it's that that's at play. Or maybe it's the socioeconomic systems or something else beyond that. And I think once we start to recognize that these nested systems are in themselves, then playing with each other and interacting with each other, as coaches, we can start to help the client draw out what's happening here for me, what systems are at work here for me, where do I need to pay attention? And this might sound very, very abstract at the moment, but I promise you, when I come to the practical approach to systems and systemic work, you'll see how it can be actually be pretty easy to get into the conversation. Okay, so let's talk about the coach as part of the system. Because I said at the very start that the systemic stance recognizes that every human being is a part of multiple systems, but that the coach is also part of a system, and those systems start to collide, collude, and coalesce. So unless you know what systems you're part of or what systems are at play for you, you can unconsciously start to coach in ways that are either collusive, confronting, or anything in between. So let's talk about the coach as part of the system. The first thing is to think about critical reflection on the self. And that means understanding your own systems in order that you can bracket them, in order that you can bracket your assumptions, your beliefs, your values, etc. If you don't take the time to critically reflect on race, gender, civilizational background, whatever it might be, if you don't have the time to, if you don't take the time to critically reflect, then we come at it in water we don't understand as water. We're swimming, thinking the water is just what it is. It's just the truth, but it's not. It's your water. It's your truth. It's your personal truth, but it's not the truth. So when we critically reflect, we think, what are the assumptions I make about what it is to live well that are going to impact the way I coach? What are the assumptions I make about being economically productive? Or what are the assumptions I make about happiness? Or what are the assumptions I make about equality? Or what are the assumptions I make about race? Or what are the assumptions I make about whatever it might be? If we don't become critically reflective, then it's really hard to know what the water is you're bringing into a coaching relationship. So then you can start to say, well, what systems am I a part of? And become really clear on your own systems. Well, I'm part of a Western, potentially part of a Western economical system. I'm part of a family system. I'm part of a corporate system. I'm part of a whatever it is you're part of. And you don't need to assess it. You just need to start to be aware of it, because once you start to become aware of it, then you can start to do the assessment. But at first, just begin to become aware of it. Oh, there's this one. Okay, that's great. I'm aware of that now. Oh, there's this system too. Okay, great. I'm aware of that. And only once you've kind of listed or mapped out your systems, you can then start to go, let me become critically aware of the impact they're having on me as a coach, and therefore what I bring into my coaching. So you can start to ask yourself, how are they shaping your coaching? Because in a sense, none of us can escape the system we're part of. In any true sense, we cannot be a detached observer. All we can do is our best to bracket that. And by the way, maybe you've not come across that term bracketing before. It's an existential term, which means to essentially put brackets around your own worldview in order that you can encounter your client's worldview with the best attempt at cleanness of thinking, if you like. And so you can start to ask yourself, how do I bracket my assumptions and beliefs and values so that my coaching becomes more in tune with the client's phenomenological experience, their lived experience, not my assumptions of what their experience is. And then you can ask yourself, what forces are at play in your coaching? You know, what economical forces are at play in your coaching? What ethical forces are at play in your coaching? What emotional forces are at play in your coaching based on the systems you're part of? How you value yourself in the world based on your effectiveness as a coach, how you have to charge money for your coaching, and the beliefs we then lock around that in order to justify that. You know, the number of times I've heard people say that free coaching is not as effective as paid for coaching. Well, that may or may not be true. I've got no idea, but I suspect it's more of a reflection of somebody's systemic viewpoint rather than an absolute truth in its own right. So we can start to tune into, what are the forces at play in my coaching based on the system, based on the water I'm swimming in? And then what systemic needs are you meeting through your coaching? How are you as a human being meeting your personal needs that reflect the system you're part of? And by the way, that's okay. This isn't saying you shouldn't be meeting your needs. You have to meet your needs. They could be emotional needs, financial needs, practical needs, logistical needs, who knows what those needs are. It's not to say you shouldn't be doing them, but it's about becoming critically reflective of the fact they're there and the potential impact they might have. And then finally, how might your systems interact with, react to, clash, or collude with your clients? And I think that's if you imagine those, I don't know if I can get back to them quickly, but if you imagine, this picture, if you imagine these circles on this side as well, on the right-hand side, coming together, two sets of ripples, being aware of that intersection of two systems feels, to me at least, incredibly important for us as coaches. If we're not beginning to be aware of how our systems are going to interact, react, clash, or collude with your clients, then we are, in a sense, being worked through by the system. We're not working with the system. We're not consciously bracketing the system. We're not consciously using the system. We're being worked through by the system. And I think that's a real danger if we don't become critically reflective on our beliefs. And by the way, I say this is my confessional here. I say this because for many, many years, it didn't occur to me to think about these systems and these paradigms. I thought that coaching was about individuals taking ownership of their lives. And I still, by the way, that's still at some DNA level how I think about coaching, because it's kind of how I do life. But just because I do life that way, just because I've experienced a system in a certain way, doesn't mean that somebody else will. So it took me many years, I would say, to become critically reflective of my beliefs that felt like just truth. No, they're not truth. They were my systemic beliefs that I'd adopted from whatever happenstance meant I was born in the UK in 1969 in Cornwall to a working class family, and all the stuff that comes from that journey. So I want to summarize the holistic and systemic stance, and then I want to talk about a few other kind of curiosities that occurred to me. So first of all, the whole human matters. And I think the more we can start to tune into the holistic dimension, and by the way, I do recognize I've spoken more about systemic than holistic tonight. But I want to just reinforce that the whole human matters. And the more we can get in tune with the holistic experience, the holistic phenomenological experience, in other words, how does that person experience their life now in front of you and there in the life they're living? How's that being experienced? The more we can tune into all aspects of that human experience rather than just the thinking, the more we can have an impact. Secondly, I believe transformation happens within systems. In other words, the transformation doesn't happen in some vacuum. The transformation that you're evoking in a client or indeed in yourself is happening within a system. And that's going to have an impact. It's going to have ripple effects. The further out that nested system goes, the less the ripples will be felt. But the ripples can be felt very strongly when that ripple is close to that person. In other words, if you evoke a change in somebody, it can have a massive effect on their partner, their friends, their boss, their employees, whoever it might be. And we need to be aware of what those systems are. I think there's an ethical dimension to this. And so systems affect what is perceived as possible and desirable. When a client comes to you, the thing they bring to you as both desirable and possible is fundamentally a reflection of the very system they're part of. Doesn't mean that's all they have to deal with. Doesn't mean that they can't think outside that. But if we don't recognize that they're bringing it from a systemic perspective, it's hard to deal with it because it just becomes the truth. And then finally, transformative coaching seeks to surface the systems that are impacting the client's change. In other words, finally, the fish sees the water. And that for me is, in a sense, the summarizing of the holistic and systemic stance. And of course, the final one there is transformative coaches need to understand their own systemic and holistic needs. Otherwise, we're at risk of, in a John Heronian sense, having perverse interventions. Perverse in the sense that we are operating from a place of unknown power working through us. And I don't mean that in any spiritual sense, although some others might have that feeling. But I mean, the power of the system can work through us, producing perverse interventions. So until we start to become really critically self-reflective, we're at danger of that. And indeed, even when we are, we're at danger of it. So let's talk about some practical approaches to being systemic. Small print. This is primarily a stance, not a toolbox, but there are practical ways to coach systemically. So I just want to name the fact that for me, being systemic is not really a set of tools. It's a stance. It's a way of thinking about the ontology of human beings, the way of being, the nature of being, that we are systemically located. But let's talk about some practical approaches. Number one, very simple. Listen out for and bring in other people's needs and influences. When I was coaching somebody recently on starting a business, they talked about their wife quite a lot. And I asked a question, which was, what is it your wife wants from you and for you? And that question led to a complete change in the coaching journey, because instead of talking about the business, we suddenly realized there was a whole relationship thing to talk about. The real meat of the coaching was more about the relationship with the partner, not with the business. The business was a symptom. And so just by listening out for who are the people here, so it doesn't have to be dramatic. It's not let's bring the system in. It's a partner. It's a friend. It's a employee. It's a, I don't know, you know, it's somebody. And you just listen out for them and then you bring them in. What do they need from you? What do you need from them? What do they want for you? How do we bring them in? In NLP, they call this ecological questioning. What's the ecology of the thing that's been talked about? And then notice patterns between systems and holistic experience. What on earth do I mean by that? What I mean is that we can look at how there's a parallel process between what's happening in the wider system and what's being experienced by the human being holistically in themselves. Perhaps there's tension in the system. There's tension in the workplace, and that tension is being felt by the person. So the internal system of the human being is mirroring the external system that they're part of. So we can start to notice, oh, it's curious. You talk about stress here and you talk about stress here. Let's talk about how those stresses are part of a systemic challenge for you that we need to start to address. And then you can explore different levels of change. We've talked about the nested systems, and we can ask the client, where does the change need to take place and what's your part of that? Where in this series of nested systems can you have an impact? And where do you think the change best happens that will help you achieve what you want to achieve or what you're trying to change? So by exploring the different levels of change, rather than only focusing on what that human being can do individually, we can start to bring greater awareness to the consequences of their personal actions, enabling them to have greater awareness for both the ripple effects and the dilution. I think it's so important to recognize the dilution. I think a fabulous example of systemic concerns at the moment is, of course, environmental. We can all do stuff individually to improve the environment. We can all pick up litter. We can all make sure we recycle our plastic. But we also know, I think, at some deep level, that unless there's some much bigger systemic change, me recycling my bottle is not going to really change the big picture. It doesn't mean we don't do it. It doesn't mean we let ourselves off the hook, but we just know at some visceral level that it gets diluted the further out it goes. And if the person doesn't recognize that dilution, then they can be setting themselves up for some disappointment. And then we can bring awareness to systemic connections, by which I mean, how does one system connect to another? How is what's happening over here in this system, let's say socio-political, impact what's happening over here in the workplace, or what's happening here in the family? Or how does what's happening in the family impact what's happening here personally? Let's try to figure out what's connecting these systems together. And then, of course, and I've talked about this already, reflect on and share your own systemic being and location. So reflect on, great, we've talked about that. But what about sharing? What about being open about what you noticed your experience to be? I think in coaching, we become obsessed by the idea that we are these questioning machines. And when we talk about reflection, we often mean repeating back. But I think we can do so much more than that. I think we can reflect on ourselves as a catalyst for people to reflect on themselves, to notice how the system's showing up in ourselves, and to be able to name that, talk about it without judgment, enables the client to do the same. I think that feels really important to me, that we can talk about our own systemic challenges, our own systemic limitations. If you're swimming in salt water, you ain't a freshwater fish. And being able to say that is useful. And then notice what's being evoked in you that could be part of the system. In supervision, we call this parallel process. It's noticing that you're feeling something, but it's not yours. It's not really yours. You don't feel that way. That's not come from your life. But it's like you're a tuning fork for the system. And when you start to tune into that and allow yourself to be that tuning fork, you can talk about it in a way that enables the client to then grapple with this systemic issue. And I realize there's a lot here, and I'm sorry I can't go into much more detail, but hopefully you're picking up the nuance of it and you can start to play with some of these ideas. And then explore who is absent but implicit. This was a phrase used by Michael White, one of the founders of narrative therapy. And he used this phrase, absent but implicit. And something about it struck home for me. I loved it. It's so simple and yet so profound. Who's not being talked about? And yet they're implicit in the story. They're implicit in the impact. And we can say the same about the system. What system is not being talked about, but it's implicit in what's being talked about? And when we can start to surface who or what is absent but implicit in the conversation, that can be so powerful. And then bring attention to assumptions, values, and so on that seem to reflect an interjected systemic source. Blimey, what does that mean? Well, interjection is simply the taking in of a belief system undigested. And in other words, we haven't grappled with a belief and thought, which parts of that do I know? We eat it whole, it becomes part of our belief system, but it's not ours. It's come from somewhere. We've just taken it in, we've interjected it. But we can notice how that interjection can be a systemic interjection. In other words, it's come from the systems we're part of. What does it mean to be Western? What does it mean to be Eastern? What does it mean to be a woman? What does it mean to be a man? What does it mean to be gender neutral? What does it mean to be, what's the systemic source that we've interjected? And I think when we can bring our attention to these assumptions, in other words, when a client says something, we can notice it and reflect back. Where's that belief come from? And to what extent is it a reflection of a system they're part of? And then finally, I think there's two more. Two more simple ones. One is collaboratively map the systems the client is a part of. Spend some time. In the same way I've encouraged you to map your system, spend some time with the client, having them map their system. All right, so I'm part of the family system, part of this work system, part of this country system, part of this political system, blah, 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 blah. Just do the work. Do an exploration, a systemic exploration. And then finally, I don't know if any of you guys have read John Whittington's work on constellations, but his main approach is using objects to represent systems, or using the self in a physical sense to represent space between parts of a system. And that can be a lot of fun to play with. You can use parts to map what that system looks like to you. What are the spaces between people or things within a system? Or what are the spaces between systems? You might find that you notice the family system is actually further away from the personal system than the work system. It's like, that's interesting. You know, at some unconscious level, we position the person, this is the client doing the work, of course, but the client positions themselves as a personal system nearer the work system than the family system, or vice versa, anything in between. By using objects, you can start to create a spatial awareness of the systemic relationships. All right, finally, my cheese board of thoughts, and I apologize. I hope it's okay. I realize that there isn't much time for Q&A, and I apologize for that, but hopefully you get value from these talks. So first of all, taking this delight that is this cheese board, and then let's move into it. So I thought about a dish of parting ideas. These are just sort of thoughts that came to me. Number one, systems as fractals. Years and years ago, I did a talk called the Fractal Nature of Coaching. And I was fascinated by this idea that in a sense, you can take anything and what's a part of it is just an exact replica of that bigger thing. And that bigger thing is also an exact replica of something that's bigger than it. That's a fractal. At a very basic level, a fractal stays the same no matter what size. So you can go smaller, 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 bigger and bigger and bigger, bigger. And I kind of think at some level, a system is a fractal. And so therefore, when we're dealing with a client, we're dealing with a fractal of a system. And we can start to say, well, to what extent, as a fractal, can we start to work with you, given that you are a representation of the system you're part of? And I quite like this idea of exploring. This is kind of my blue cheese part of the cheese board. It's like, not sure yet. Maybe it's a little bit dodgy to eat, but there's something quite attractive about it at the same time. Systems as fractals. I quite like that concept. Next up is every contact leaves a trace. And this was a phrase that Irvin Yalom uses a lot, the existential psychotherapist. He says, every contact leaves a trace. And I remember years ago, somebody asking me in one of my introduction sessions to coaching, Nick, if somebody has a psychotherapist, can they also have a coach? And I asked what would mean they couldn't. And they said, well, maybe there might be clashing conversations. And I said, there are clashing conversations everywhere. That person walks into Pret and orders a flat white, and the way that person at Pret deals with them could have as much impact as the psychotherapist or the coach. If we start to accept that we're part of complex adaptive systems, then we have to recognize that every part of that system is leaving a trace. And in a way, that's really empowering, because all we need to do is be the part of the system we want to be, but we don't need to try to control the whole system, and we don't need to worry about what's happening in the whole system. It's beyond our control. So every contact leaves a trace. I really believe that when we think of a system, it's so complex. But the only thing we can hope is that we do our part to bring awareness to the client, but trusting too that every other human being in that person's life is leaving a trace. Next up is time as a temporal system. Years ago, I did a talk called Time and Timelessness in Coaching. And I played with the idea that whilst time is experienced in a linear fashion, psychologically it isn't. And in a sense, you could say that time is a kind of a system. It has parts, and those parts are integral in how they affect each other. If I have a positive view of the future, it affects my present. If I have a negative view of the future, it affects my present. If I have a negative view of the past, it affects my future. If I have a positive view of the past, it affects my future. It affects my past, my present. I can mix them around. At the time, I remember using flip charts, and I put the past in front of me and the future behind me. I started to play with this idea that, in a sense, time is a temporal system where the parts create a whole. And I like that concept, that we could play with that as coaches. What if we started to think about the past as the future and the future as the past? That might sound a bit weird. So maybe that's the what's that cheese you put on spaghetti? Can't think what it is, but maybe it's the really, really hard cheese you don't want too much of. This timer as a temporal system. But I think it's something you can sprinkle on, this philosophical play on the idea of time. Next up is the phenomenology of self and systems. And what I mean by that is, I think there's something about how do we help the client explore their experience of themselves in a system. We might think of a systemic world. We might all take on board this talk tonight and go, yeah, systemic concept, completely agree with Nick. But the client doesn't. That's fine. What's their phenomenological experience of being in a system? They might feel absolutely, completely in control of their life. It's not for us to say they're not. So I think we have to be very sensitive to what's the lived experience of a human being, rather than, yeah, but you're part of a system. We have to be interested in their lived experience. I often talk about that when it comes to free will as well. There's a lot of challenge nowadays in terms of free will. You know, neuroscience is kind of showing more and more that the idea of free will is not really something that's true in a deeper sense. But it's like, we experience it as free will. And it's the experience that matters, not the scientific truth. And then ghosts, ghouls, and poltergeists within systems. There's a wonderful writer called Robin Shoei, and he talks about ghosts and stakeholders. And I like the idea of really thinking about ghosts, ghouls, and poltergeists. And these are the characters that are inhabiting in a way you could tie this to time as a temporal system. These are the characters that are inhabiting a system that are no longer there. They're past figures. You could think of them in psychodynamic terms as transference, projection, or in your case, counter-transference. These are the ghosts of Christmas past. And yet they're in the coaching. They're inhabiting the system. They're ex-girlfriends, ex-boyfriends, ex-bosses, ex-employees, ex-whoever exes. And somehow they're causing disturbance. They're throwing things around. They're opening all the cupboards in the kitchen and leaving them open. They're emptying all the cereal all over the floor. So when you get up in the morning, you think, my God, I've got a poltergeist. They're scaring you at night. They're the ghoul that wakes you up. You know, these ghosts, ghouls, and poltergeists are everywhere in coaching. And if we don't recognize their power, and we don't recognize they're part of a system, then we ignore a really, really critical part to how somebody can change. And then picking up on Robin's concept of ghosts and stakeholders, yeah, we have stakeholders too. And when I say stakeholders, I'm talking about anyone whose lives will be impacted by the coaching you're doing with this person. That could be a fellow employee, a team member, but it could also be a romantic partner, children, parents. Who knows who the stakeholders are? But not only are they impacted, but they are impacting. And if we don't acknowledge the impact that these stakeholders have on the client's ability to change, again, we're ignoring a critical part of the system. And then systemic ripple effects. Actually, I've talked about this already, but I was kind of interested in this idea that when a client changes, what are the ripple effects that they're having, and how do they become aware of them and become conscious of, is that what I expected? Is that what I wanted? You know, becoming aware of the risk involved in change without being scared of change, because I think the greater awareness that we have of what we're doing, the better. And finally, just to throw all of this, out the window, is the system really a system? I'm kind of going to leave you on that question. I'm going to do some Q&A, but I'm going to leave us on that question. Is the system really a system? And I go back to the quote from Peter Senge, who said around the idea that a system serves a common purpose. And I'm not convinced by that at all. I wonder if a system is simply a psychological construct in some way. So having said everything I've said, I want to leave you with this little question mark around, is a system really a system? And with that, I'm going to say thank you so much, and I'm going to end the recording, and then I'm going to do a bit of Q&A.
Thanks for listening to Coaching Uncaged. If you want to find out more about becoming a coach, developing your coaching skills further, or training as a coaching supervisor, then head along to animascoaching.com. Thanks again, and catch you on the next episode.